Good morning. Not sure what to think when the first time my name is mentioned this morning, I get laughter. But if I could have a few volunteers, maybe some young guys, there's three boxes over here in the corner, and they have folders with notes for this class in them. I made 150 copies. Looking out, I'm not sure that'll be enough, but I hope it is. If not, we can get some more here tomorrow. Probably. But while they're handing out, just kind of a brief introduction. Some of you may not know me. Some of you probably don't know me. In case you were looking through the guide here and you saw all these well-known evangelists and thinking, wow, that's going to be really good. And you got to the bottom, it's like, who is that? So just in case, I'll just give you a brief introduction here. I'm Dennis Stanley. I'm a member here at Murray Road, have been for, I think, close to 20 years. My wife and I attend here with our three sons. All three of them are here. Two of them are in the class. They're supposed to be in the class. I know David is. Joshua's supposed to be here somewhere. He's in the back there. And then Daniel is, our youngest, is downstairs. How this class came about probably 3 years ago, the elders here asked me to do a study of the chronology of the Bible. And so we've been doing that over, I think, probably the last 2 years. About every 3 months, we have a session, a half-hour session on Sunday night, discussing the chronology of the Bible. And I'll admit, when I first got that assignment, I had no idea how involved that would become. I had no idea the difficulties involved in piecing together a complete chronology of the Bible. So it's been very much a learning experience for me. You'll see as we go through the class that I don't have all the answers. There will be hopefully not too many hanging questions, but there will be some things that will present what information we have available. I can tell you what I think, give you some different possibilities, but it's not an exact science by any means. While those are being passed out, I'll introduce you to a couple of symbols that you'll see in there. I think everyone knows that means equals. Interestingly, as you get into more advanced math, you learn this symbol, which means approximately equal to. And when you're using a computer, there's no key for that, but there is a key for that. So the little squiggly line that you'll see in there means approximately equal to. That's another symbol you'll see in there. That means I don't know. So it means I don't know or I'm guessing. So, and those two symbols are used liberally throughout here, and you'll see why as we go through this. So you might turn to page 1, and we'll just give a little overview here. So why study the chronology of the Bible? This study over the last couple of years has been the first time in my life that, and I'm not aware, has anyone ever done a study of the chronology of the Bible? At Kimber, back in the corner here. Okay, great. So it's not something we normally do. Normally, we go through book by book and, you know, study the text of the book, and we may, you know, we'll come to a place where it talks about some time span, and within the context of the chapter or book that we're studying, we'll talk about it. But we don't normally take the Bible as a whole and look at the chronology of the Bible.
Excuse me, Dennis.
So, yeah.
If there's any families that can share, didn't get all the way to the back, so if there's any of you that you can share, just hold it pin. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
That's probably fun. We weren't getting that many.
Okay. All right. Yes, and I was I was going to mention that too, and I'll defer this to the elders, but if you want to, if you think you won't be able to hang on to it from day to day, maybe some of the younger ones, if you want to write your name in it and put it back up in the boxes here in front and then pick it up again each day this week, that way you won't lose it. I'll leave that up to your discretion if that's okay with the elders. And then maybe before class you can come up and get it so we're not, you know, disrupting the class or anything. But I'd rather you do that than take it home and, you know, or to your host house and leave it there or leave it in a car or something like that. So you might want to do that. I'll just leave that up to what you want to do there. So why study the chronology of the Bible? Well, it gives us some more in-depth understanding and appreciation of the Bible. Another word I might use there is perspective. When you understand, and this may be nowhere more true than in the prophets of the Old Testament. When you read the prophets of the Old Testament, when you understand the time period that they were prophesying in, and you can go to the right place in 1st or 2nd Kings or 2nd Chronicles and understand the events leading up to, during the time they prophesied, right after they prophesied, it gives you, it's essential to be able to understand the message that the prophet is bringing. So that's what understanding the chronology of the Bible can give you, and not just there, but throughout the Bible. One way I think of this class is all those Bible studies that you've done over the years, and you get to that long list of names, and it says so-and-so lived so many years and begat so-and-so, and then they lived so many years and begat so-and-so, and usually when we're studying through the Bible, we get to that list, and you know, if you're called on to read, oh, no, I don't want to read that. I can't pronounce those names. And that's even if we read it. You know, sometimes we get to those lists, and we just, well, we're just going to skip over this. You know, we don't need to study this list. Well, this study, we're going to take those lists and pull them out and study them in this class. So, but, you know, sometimes we think those lists are boring, maybe, but there's a lot of information in there. And it's those lists that give us that chronological sequence of events in the Bible. Those are the lists that help us to understand the time span from here to here and so forth in the Bible. Another reason for studying the chronology of the Bible is you'll find, and I think you'll appreciate this more as we go through this, if you haven't gone through this before, is that skeptics, people you might run into at work, at school, and so forth, and I'll say maybe the more educated among those skeptics, they may come back to you and say, well, have you ever looked at the kings of the divided kingdom in the times of the reigns there? They all contradict each other. It's a big mess. So that proves the Bible is wrong. And I guarantee you, if you haven't done it, and you think, oh, well, I'll show them, and you sit down and try to do it, you will find yourself wrapped around the axle and proving their point to them very quickly, because it's not easy. So we hopefully, in this class, we can delve into that and maybe get some answers for that so that you can have an answer for those people and say, well, on the surface it appears that way, but here's some things to consider here and work out some of that with them maybe. And it could make a big difference at some point in your life when talking to someone. And out of this, we will all gain a better appreciation of the Bible. Sometimes, I know in the past, I tend to shy away from some of the more difficult things where I think maybe the answer isn't going to be there, that I don't have the faith, I guess, to believe that it will work out. But, you know, the older I get, when I tackle those tough studies in the Bible where on the surface it appears like there isn't an answer, I find out that you learn more that way. And there are lots of lists of chronologies out there, and typically it's a list, it's got dates BC on it, and there's no explanation for it. And you know, you may get into that and start trying to understand those dates. And at first, it doesn't make any sense. But if you're patient and take the time, you'll end up learning a lot more in that process. I'll talk a little bit about our ground rules and assumptions. We're going to assume that the Bible, as we have it in our common translations, is accurate. And the reason I make that statement, as we have it today in our common translations, specifically what I'm referring to there is the Hebrew text for the Old Testament. The Septuagint, the Greek translation, which Wade will get into, I'm sure, in his class, of the Old Testament, the numbers have been changed. Well, the numbers are different. And there's two theories for that, I guess. One is that there were older Hebrew texts that was based on. The other theory, which I kind of lean towards, and we'll talk more about that later, and this may not be 100% true, but like when you get into the reigns of the kings, you got numbers that are different in the Septuagint, and it looks like the translators saw these apparent contradictions and tried to correct them in that translation. So that's why I say we're using our translations are based on the Masoretic Hebrew text, and those are the numbers we're going with, is what you have in your translation that you're using. Supplemental sources of information will be used to complement what the Bible tells us, not to contradict the Bible. You can find plenty of sources of information out there that will contradict the Bible in this area. You about have to use some other sources, especially when you get into dating events in the Bible. So we do have to go there for some aspects of this study, but it'll be to complement what the Bible tells us. Apparent contradictions in the Bible, and this is very important, are result of an imperfect understanding on our part, not due to errors in the Bible. We'll make an attempt to understand and resolve these. We may not be successful in all cases. This is very important, especially when we get into the judges and the kings, especially, that we keep this in mind. We don't lose faith and start making up numbers, you know, to try to get it to fit. I forgot what I was going to say there. One more thing. We have a lot of people in here that have a lot of knowledge about the Bible, so there may be some areas where we'll get an answer out of the congregation from someone who's studied this that I completely overlooked. That may very well happen when we get into some of those areas. We're not going to just give dates without explanation. What I've attempted to do, and there's some studies where you don't really need a handout. This is one where I felt like we really needed a handout. I wanted to get all the verses out there that pertain to chronology so that we can work with those verses. I didn't want to give lists of events with dates without an explanation because those dates, there's some interpretation in that, and there may be some disagreement about those dates. So I wanted to get the verses out there. I will tell you my thoughts on what the date should be, but it's not going to be just here's the dates without explanation. What I really want out of this class is to get out to you all the verses and some information on how to work with those verses. Throw the problems out there that there are in things that appear to be contradictory in the Bible, rather than just, you know, saying here's dates and ignore that. I want to get those out there so you're aware of them, along with some possible explanations for those. So the dates are secondary. In fact, the first time we went through this study, especially in the earlier part of the Old Testament, I didn't really have a problem once we got up to the fall of Jerusalem and you know that time where the dates I think are pretty solid, but especially before that, I really resisted putting any dates on my notes, and you'll see I do have dates in here. I finally decided, you know, I needed to get something out there as a starting point to work from, But don't feel like those dates are etched in stone and absolute. We'll talk about the issues with that later. But the dates are somewhat secondary. So the chronological periods we'll cover is Genesis, chronology of Genesis, which is contained basically in the generations of Adam and the generations of Seth up through the flood, or generations of Adam to the flood and generations of Seth up to Abraham. We'll talk about the sojourn in Egypt through the conquest of Canaan, and there's some issues there with how to interpret this 430-year sojourn that's mentioned in Exodus and Galatians versus 400 years of bondage that's mentioned to Abraham and also by Stephen in Acts chapter 7. The period of the judges we'll talk about. And again, there's some reconciling we'll have to do there of the 480 years from when they came out of Egypt until the temple was started versus the 450 years that Paul mentions in Acts as the period of the judges. Talk about where Ruth fits in. We'll talk about the kings of Israel and Judah, including the chronology of the prophets. And when we get there, I noticed after I had this all printed out that I forgot a couple of the prophets on my list there, but we'll talk about them and where they fit in chronologically. And at that point, we can start talking about synchronizing biblical chronology with secular chronology and actually putting dates to some of these events in the Bible. But we can't really do that until we get into this period of the divided kingdom up to the fall of Jerusalem. And then we'll talk about the fall of Jerusalem, the Babylonian captivity. We'll talk about the 70 years prophecy, the 70 years of captivity in Babylon. And we'll talk about the prophets of that time period. We'll talk a little bit about the period between events between the Old and the New Testament. We think that, you know, the Bible ends, you know, at Malachi, and it picks up again with Jesus, and there's, you know, 400 some odd years there that we don't have anything on. But actually, we do have information about what's going to happen during that time period from Daniel. We'll talk a little bit about that and those events as they were fulfilled. We'll talk about the chronology of the life of Christ. What you won't see in your notes is a harmony of the Gospels. There's a lot of those out there that we could spend a two-week study on that. But I wanted to focus on the chronology of, you know, the 3.5 years of his ministry primarily. And we'll talk about the 70 weeks prophecy and some ways to interpret that. We'll talk about the chronology of Acts and when the letters were written versus Acts. So if you want to turn over, and I'll apologize, you may be thinking, why didn't he have a box of magnifying glasses to go with this? But I think you can read it. And there's two charts here. And the charts are kind of the same in that they give the chronology of the whole Bible on a chart there. So this basically is our class here on these two charts. Now, there's a lot of detail to come in the pages to follow, but this is kind of an overview of what we'll be talking about this week. The first chart is major events in biblical chronology. The second chart is the books of the Bible chronologically. So if we start by looking here at the major events in biblical chronology, and again, this isn't all the major events of the Bible. This is the events that are significant, I believe, in establishing the chronology of events in the Bible. And I'll just write on the board here because it is kind of small, and we'll just kind of map out these time periods here. But what I kind of wanted to show in this major events in biblical chronology in that chart is we have an unbroken chronological sequence given to us in the Bible from creation until the end of Acts, basically. Okay, it's an unbroken chronology there. And the sections in that chronology that we can all link all together to give us this unbroken chain are basically given in generations of Adam. So this is creation to flood. Then we have the generations of Seth from the flood until Abraham, and specifically Abram receiving the promise. Okay, and then the next step here is this 430-year sojourn that I mentioned on the overview, which takes us up to the Exodus from Egypt. Okay, the next is the 480 years from when they came out of Egypt until the temple was built, or until the temple construction began. And then after that, we have the reigns of the kings of the Israel before and after it was divided, up to the fall of Jerusalem. And then we have the 70 years of captivity. And then we could put here the 70 weeks for 490 years up to Christ. So if you link all these together, you have an unbroken chain, if you will, from creation up to the time of Christ. Now, where exactly some of those points fall is where we'll get into in details in the class. Not always 100% clear, but we'll talk about that and what some of the different possibilities there are. Yes?
Should that be the generations of Shem there?
Yeah, sorry. Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Yep. Sorry. Seth was Adam's son. Right? Thank you. Shem. Sorry about that. Thank you for correcting me on that. Okay, so that's kind of what we have here in this first chart here, major events in biblical chronology. You'll see I made a note down there near the bottom that when we get to this time period in here, you'll notice that the Bible starts referring to events in terms of such and such year of Nebuchadnezzar. We get into Ezra and we get such and such year of Darius, the kings of Persia. So that's why you'll see the king list in here for the kings of Persia. We start synchronizing, if you will, in the Bible with secular history, where we have pretty well-established dates for the reigns of those kings. So it's kind of like up to this point, we're kind of, you know, we got this piece and this piece and this piece, and it's kind of floating around. It's not locked in. And then when we get to that point there, it's like, okay, now we can lock it in and say, you know, that's the date, and we can date back from there is how you come up with BC dates for these events. If you look at the second chart there, which is the books of the Bible chronologically, and I find this interesting. And what's interesting to me about it is where is you have long periods of time where we don't have a lot of information, and like before the flood, we have over 1,600 years, and there's just a few chapters in the Bible on that. But there's certain periods of time where, you know, if you look at the ratio of words to years, if you will, words in the Bible to number of years covered by those words, that ratio really shoots up. And I see three periods of time where we have that really high ratio, a lot of information in a short period of time. And the first of those is around the time when the law was given. We have, if you take out the first 80 years of Exodus, which is from when Moses was born until he came back to lead them out, if you take that out, than we've got from when Moses returned to lead them out of Egypt. We've got most of Exodus. We've got Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, and Joshua. We've got five books there, five pretty good-sized books that cover a time span of about 45 years. Okay, so we've got a lot of information on that period of time. And then we don't have so much up until the time of the kings. And then again, and specifically when you get towards the end of the divided kingdom, going towards the fall of Jerusalem and then the return from captivity. And we have, and you know, if you look on your chart here, you'll just see all this, these prophets down here and these books up here, all during that short, relatively short period of time, about 200 years or so, where we have a lot of information around that period of time. And then the third and final period of time where we have a lot of information is, of course, Jesus' ministry and the beginning of the church. We have Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John that are almost entirely about the 3.5 years of Jesus' ministry. We have the book of Acts, and then we have most of the letters, most of the epistles, excluding those of John, are written during the time of the books of Acts, during the time of Acts, or very shortly thereafter. So again, we have a period of about 45 years there total, where we have all these books in the Bible that are concentrated in that short period of time. So we have these three periods of time where you can say most of the Bible is within those three periods of time. And what were those periods of time? Well, we have the giving of the old law. We have what the result was of how the people obeyed or disobeyed that law. It was God judging them based upon that law. So it was the judgment of them, their punishment for disobeying that law, but also there's always that message of hope. There's the remnant that was returned out of that was returned from the captivity. So we have the giving of the law, we have the judging, punishment, but also salvation based upon that law, if salvation is the right word there. But some of them were saved out of that. And then we have in the New Testament, the giving of the new covenant. So I would propose to you that the final piece there, which is how we respond to that, is what's yet to be written. But we have these three periods of time in the Bible where most of the books of the Bible are concentrated in those three areas. So that's those first two charts there. And I guess I'll just, it's a good time to maybe open it up if there's any questions or comments on this. And if you're seeing a number on here and you're like, oh, I know that's wrong, because maybe reserve until we get into the details of discussing where those numbers come from. But if there's any just questions here before we go and dive into the chronology of Genesis, I'll give you the opportunity for that. Okay, if not, just... Yes.
Just a typo.
Okay.
On your page 3, because you made the same mistake on your board, you have generations of Seth instead of generations of Shem.
Thank you. I don't know what I was thinking when I wrote that. Obviously, I wasn't thinking. Thank you. Yeah, if you find an error someplace, yeah, where it's typo, please point it out so that... We can. Okay. Yeah, that should. Thank you. Yeah, I did notice that one. Under between the Old and New Testaments on the overview, it should be prophecies fulfilled concerning Persia, Greece, and Rome, not Greek and Rome. Thank you. I think I had that worded differently originally, and I changed it and didn't change that word. Thank you. So, the chronology of the book of Genesis. So, you might turn to Genesis chapter 5, if you care to. And here we have one of those lists that sometimes we skip over when we're studying through this. And we're not going to go through this list exhaustively and read it all, but just kind of give you a flavor for how we do this. And this isn't rocket science. It's simple math here. So we start out in verse 3 with Adam lived 130 years and begot a son in his own likeness, and he named him Seth. There's Seth. And then, you know, it gives the total lifespan of Adam. He had other sons and daughters. And then in verse 6, we have that Seth lived 105 years and begot Enosh. So if we wanted to piece together, you know, how much time is covered here in these generations, and you'll see, you might look at page 9 in your handout. And again, this is just simple addition here. So you take how long Adam lived from when he was created until he begot Seth. It was 130 years. How long did Seth live before he begot the next generation? 105. Enosh lived 90 years before he begot the next generation, and so on down the list there through Lamech. And then Lamech was 182 years old when he begot Noah, and that's in verses 28 and 29. So we have this time span of years, 1,056 until Noah was born. Okay, so then the question is, how old was Noah when the flood happened? And we're told that in Genesis chapter 7 and verse 11, in the 600th year of Noah's life, second month, 17th day of the month, on that day, all the fountains of the great deep were broken up and the windows of heaven were opened. So Noah was 600 years old when the flood happened. So you add all that up and you have 1,656 years from creation to the flood. Again, it's just simple addition there, but that's, I believe, why that genealogy was given, and given in that way was so that we could know that time span there from creation until when the flood happened. And when you work through those numbers, a couple of interesting facts come out, and you may or may not have heard this before, but Methuselah died in the same year as the flood. So either Methuselah was one of the wicked ones who perished in the flood, or he may have just been passed away right before the flood happened. But that's one of those kind of interesting facts that comes out of looking at that genealogy, which you wouldn't know if you just skipped over it and ignored it. But that's one interesting fact that comes out of that. Now, the page before, I just showed graphically this same information, and I find it fascinating that we have this time span of 1,656 years, and we have about a chapter or two that really talks about it, because we have, of course, Adam and Eve covering, I think, the first three chapters, and then we have genealogy here in the fifth chapter, and then in the sixth chapter we find out what little we have about the information there. Now, there is some more information there in the chronology, but in the genealogy, if you will. But I did make some notes here that I thought were kind of interesting from what we know from the Bible about that period of time. Well, obviously, the lifespans were very long. And again, this isn't a class. You could have a whole week class, I'm sure, about the climate before we had, the atmosphere that gives us the rain and everything and how that contributed to long life. I've heard, a little bit about that. I'm not an expert on it. That's not what this class is about. But we did have those long lifespans prior to the flood. And I just threw in a chart there on page 11 that shows the lifespans from before the flood to the generations of Shem after the flood, and how it drops off down closer to lifespans that we're familiar with. The world was pretty technologically advanced during that time. We were told about musical instruments Jubal, father of those who play harp and flute. This is fifth generation from Cain. Tubal-Cain, instructor of every craftsman in bronze and iron. So this is getting somewhat technologically advanced. They're working with bronze and iron. They're making musical instruments. So there's, you know, there's some leisure time in their life. They're not just slaving away, you know, trying to just to survive. A pretty technologically advanced society developed during that 1656 years. But along with that came, of course, the wickedness. Every thought in their heart was only evil continually, the violence that we're told about there. So these are the characteristics of the world during that 1656 years. But I just find that fascinating when I think about how long that is. You know, that's like from now back to around when the Roman Empire fell. And that's just a huge amount of time. You think about all the things that have happened in our world since then, and that's this period of time that we just don't know that much about. But I guess God thought, what do we need to know about it, except that it was so evil, so violent, so wicked that he had to destroy it. So, you know, what more would we need to know about that kind of a world? So we have 1656 years up to the flood, and then to go beyond that, we go to Genesis chapter 11, verses 10 to 26, and we have another one of these lists, and we just go through it the same way. And we have to look at when, not at Shem's age, when he begot his son, because we took it up to the flood, okay? So we need to look at how long after the flood was it when he begot his son. And so it was 2 years after the flood, and then that son was 35 when he had his son, and 30 and so forth. And again, we add it up, and we come up with from the flood until Abram was born was 292 years. Again, it's just simple addition there, looking at the genealogy in Genesis chapter 11. But then the reference point I'm going to use here, and we'll see why when we get into the 430-year sojourn, is the reference point I want to use is from Genesis chapter 12, when Abram first received the promise. We look at those first four verses there. The Lord said to Abram, "Get out of your country, from your family, from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great. And you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse him who curses you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. So he was 75 when he was given this promise. So we have 292 years to when he received the promise. We have add 75 to that. And we get 367 years from the flood until Abram receives the promise. And then we'll go ahead and take it to when Jacob's family goes to Egypt. We have that Abram was 100 years old when he begot Isaac. Isaac was 60. And I have the references right there for you. You can look them up. Isaac was 60 when Jacob was born, and Jacob was 130 years old when he went to Egypt. And I didn't put the reference there, but I have it on the chart here for Genesis 47 and 28. You can go to find out the 130 years as Jacob's age when they went to Egypt. So it's on the chart there, but I neglected to put it on the table there. So we have the time span then from when Abram received the promise until Jacob's family went to Egypt as being 215 years. So from the flood until they went to Egypt, the 70 went to Egypt, 582 years. And we get a total duration for the book of Genesis of 2,255 years. So more than one third of the time from creation to now is just in that one book of Genesis. And I kind of tried to show that on the initial chart here. I actually had to scrunch it up a little bit. I wanted to show it to scale, but the print would have really been small if I had that bar to scale versus the other. But I find that kind of interesting, that huge span of time covered in that one book of Genesis. So we are just after 10 o'clock, so I will open it up for questions for the last 15 minutes here. Yes, sir.
I was just wondering if the total duration of Genesis, if that time was including the 20 years that Jacob spent in Egypt before he died?
Yes, it's 17 years, actually.
Okay.
Right, and that's... it's not in that total duration, because that, I used the 130 years, which is when he went to Egypt. It did not, thank you for asking that. It did not include the 17 years.
Okay.
Thank you. I think we had a hand up here in the aisle.
Thank you.
Do you have any idea of what the population of the earth was at the time of the flood?
No.
Only eight people survived it, and I just wondered what percentage that would be.
I imagine, I know there's formulas for population growth that someone could conjecture maybe how much it is. Has anyone looked into that and have any numbers? I would imagine it was in the millions, but... you know, with that amount of time, but I don't, there's so many variables in that, you know, mortality rates and so forth. I don't know. Good question, but that's one of those, that symbol right there. I don't know. Any other questions? Okay. If we don't have questions, do I just keep going?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, So let's go ahead and jump into the 430-year sojourn. Yes. No, because I think if you... I need to look it up, but...
Can you repeat the question?
She wants to know if we should add 17 to the 2255, and I think the answer is no. And what I'm looking to see is where do we have the account of Jacob's death. Well, it's in Genesis. I'm sorry? Genesis 49, yes. We have... Jacob's death recorded there.
We don't get to 2255.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Well, I think Janice is right here. I just have to. I can't do math while I'm standing up here in front of everybody. Sorry. Normally I'm pretty good at math, but.
You add 17 years to the 150. I'm sorry.
Right. You take. Right. I think the 17-year, I'm going to correct what I said before. I think the 17 years is, and it's just simple math, and I just cannot do it in my right while I'm standing up here. I'm sorry. Because it's 215 years from the promise until They went to Egypt. It was 367. So 367 plus 215 is 582. But 1656 plus 582 is not 2255. But if you add 17, it is. So the 2255 does include the 17 years of Jacob because his death is recorded in Genesis. So I marked that as the end point chronologically of Genesis. So thank you. And sorry, I misanswered the question before.
What was the reference of the 17 years?
Genesis 47 and 28. Thank you. And that is when Jacob's talking to Pharaoh, I believe. No, that isn't. There is another time when he is talking to Pharaoh about his age. But 47:27, it says, Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years, so the length of Jacob's life was 147 years. So 130 years up until he went to Egypt and 17 years after. Thank you. And I think he gives his age. Yeah, he gives his age there as 130. Thank you. So Genesis 47:9 and 47:28 are the two references there on Jacob's age. Okay. So let's jump to page 14 here, and we'll at least throw out some verses on here today, and we can finish up this section tomorrow. So like I said in the beginning, we're going to throw all the verses out here and try to come to an understanding of what it all means. And the first verse I have here, I have two references to the 430-year sojourn in Egypt. Exodus 12, 40 and 41, now the sojourn of the children of Israel who lived in Egypt was 430 years. Now, this was written when they were coming out of Egypt, okay? And it came to pass at the end of the 430 years, on that very same day, it came to pass that all the armies of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. And that phrase there, on that very same day, was like a red flag to me that this is an important date in biblical chronology. So that's why I have it included as one of the links, if you will, in that chain of Bible chronology that we need to figure out this 430 years. Okay, the other reference to it is in Galatians. And Paul, I just wrote 317 there, but we may want to see the verses ahead of that so that we know the reference point for that. But that verse says, "And this I say, that the law, which was 430 years later," and let's go there so we'll be clear on later than what. Galatians chapter 3. And we'll just go to the verse before that. "Now to Abraham and his seed were the promises made. He does not say, and to seeds as of many, but as of one, and to your seed, who is Christ. And this I say, that the law, which was 430 years later, after the promise, cannot annul the covenant that was confirmed before by God in Christ, that it should make the promise of no effect." So, In my mind here, this is saying that the starting point of the 430 years was when the promise was given to Abram. And we'll just leave it at that for now, and we can maybe come back to that later. But that's how I read Galatians 3 there. Now, in addition to those two mentions of the 430-year sojourn, we also have references to 400 years of bondage. In Genesis 15:13, God speaking to Abram here, he says, "Know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs and will serve them, and they will afflict them 400 years. And then we have another reference back to that in the New Testament. This is Stephen speaking here in Acts chapter 7, verse 6. "But God spoke in this way," excuse me, "that his descendants would dwell in a foreign land and that they would bring them into bondage and oppress them 400 years. So we have two references to a 430-year sojourn, and then we have two references to 400 years of bondage. And I might no, I'm not going to say that. I already said I wasn't going to use the Septuagint any, but the Septuagint does edit Exodus 12 and 40. And this is a case where you'll see that I think it's maybe a correct, what they put in there was maybe correct, but I don't know that it's right to say you can't use it here, but you can use it here. But they add, interestingly, it adds in Exodus 12 and 40, the sojourn of the children of Israel who lived in Egypt and Canaan. Okay, we'll talk about that a little bit more as we get into this. So we have two references to a 430-year sojourn in Egypt, and which appears from Paul, his interpretation of it was that it dated from the promise given to Abram, okay, from the promise to the law given, okay? Two references to 400 years of bondage, okay? Now, the time span from Abram's first receipt of the promise until Israel comes to Egypt there, and we've already talked about this before, but it was 215 years from when Abraham received the promise until they came to Egypt. So if your mind is working on these numbers, you can see we got a little problem here. We've got a 430-year sojourn from the promise given to Abram until they come out of Egypt. We have references to 400 years of bondage, and yet from the promise until they went into bondage, we know is 215 years. And 430 minus 215 is not 400. So we've got a problem here that we need to try to work out. Now, just some additional information here. The lineage from Levi to Moses and Aaron, I give there as Levi's lifespan from was 137 years, and I give the references here for that. You can go to Exodus 6, also in 1 Chronicles chapter 6 to find these numbers. Kohath, his son, had a lifespan of 133 years. Amram had a lifespan of 137 years, and then the next generation was Moses and Aaron, and Moses we know was 80 when he came back to Egypt to lead them out, and Aaron was 83. And I give the references there in Exodus and also in Acts. So we're pretty much at 10:15 here. That's something you can chew on overnight, and we'll try to come up with an answer tomorrow. Thanks for your attention.